This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Thanks, Tim, and I'd like to thank Dr. Conte and the course organizers for the kind invitation to be here and to be speaking about something that I'm very passionate about, ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysms. Here are my disclosures. Ruptured aortic aneurysms have an overall mortality that has been quoted at 85%, with two-thirds of patients dying before reaching a hospital or without an operation. And the perioperative mortality for open repair of a ruptured AAA approaches 50%. That has not changed in the last 20 years until recently. Harborview Medical Center at the University of Washington is the only level one trauma center covering five American states, Washington, Alaska, Wyoming, Idaho, Montana. That's 25% of the landmass of the United States, so a very large landmass, but only 15 million people. What we see is about 30 to 50 ruptured aortic aneurysms per year, and we see those numbers starting to decline over time. When we went back and looked in 2013, at 431 ruptured aortic aneurysms, we were able to gather a lot of data, but we also saw a trend, a declining trend of number of ruptured aortic aneurysms. I'm going to present to you, ladies and gentlemen, a dramatic example. In September of 2008, a 79-year-old male experienced the acute onset of abdominal and low back pain. His family called 911. Medic 1 arrived. He was hypotensive to a systolic blood pressure of 70 in the field. And on arrival to our facility, his blood pressure was 92, his heart rate was 90, and his temperature was 37. So he underwent a CT scan per our protocol. And what you'll see here is a ruptured 12-centimeter aortoiliac aneurysm. And these iliac vessels are no walk in the park. So per our protocol, we brought this patient down into the operating room. The anesthesiologists were really anxious about intubating this patient. He was becoming bradycardic. His heart rate was now down in the 30s. He was frothing at the mouth. It was difficult to maintain his airway. And I held them at bay, and I said, just give me a second to put a clamp on his aorta. So we went ahead and put an aortic occlusion balloon up under no anesthesia at all. So no local, just a needle in the groin, aortic occlusion balloon. His blood pressure shot up to 200. And his cheeks turned pink, and he looked around the room and said, where am I? What's going on here? So it's really an epiphany when you're able to clamp the aorta of a human who's in true hemorrhagic shock and to see the response of that without them being mechanically intubated. So here are some pictures from that procedure. Here is his follow-up CT scan. This patient was discharged within about 9 days from the hospital. Well, what have we learned? My job today is to impart some lessons learned to you about managing ruptured aortic aneurysms. We looked at our data on all patients between 2004 and 2015, six data abstractors. We looked at over 40,000 variables, 95,000 images, and we looked at 30-day and long-term outcome data. I have 15 lessons to provide to you. Lesson one, systems and protocols make a difference. Algorithms serve as surrogates for an organized approach to ruptured AAA and can be an overall marker for good quality care. We proved that at our institution by implementing a protocol in 2007, a decade ago, and we were able to see our mortality cut in half overall from 57% all the way down to 25%. For those patients who are lucky enough to undergo endovascular repair, that mortality rate was all the way down to 16%. So a dramatic reduction at a single institution that manages a lot of these patients. We published this in the Journal of Vascular Surgery. It's available for any of you to read our results. Lesson number two, local or no anesthesia makes a difference. In looking back at nearly 100 ruptured EVARs, we saw that the mortality rate was higher in those patients undergoing general anesthesia. Now, this might be something that you say there's a big selection bias here and that our numbers weren't big enough to generate that, but if you look at the IMPROVE study on ruptured aneurysms, a prospective randomized controlled study, they found exactly the same thing. Patients that have local anesthesia do better. Lesson number three, Aortic occlusion balloons make a difference, and they bide time. We always place the aortic occlusion balloon from the straightest iliac. Here's a case example of a patient in 2007 with what I would term a right lower quadrant abdominal aortic aneurysm, a lot of tortuosity in that left common iliac. So we went ahead and placed the main device from the left side and the aortic occlusion balloon from the straightest side. What does that do for you? It allows for you to do gate cannulation much faster, and gate cannulation clearly makes a difference in time. Lesson number four, nearly three-quarters of these patients qualify for endovascular repair. In looking at 95,000 images, the aortic neck determines candidacy most often. Iliac access is rarely an exclusion criteria, especially now with lower profile devices. Here's an example of a patient who came in with a ruptured juxtarenal abdominal aortic aneurysm, and we were able to do an on-table fenestration for this patient to preserve the left renal artery. Again, this is a ruptured aortic aneurysm. It only takes a few minutes to modify a device on the back table, and here are the follow-up images on that particular patient with a successful result. These are very important criteria for those of you who manage ruptured AAA. These four criteria: admission pH less than 7.2, age greater than 76, creatinine greater than 2, and pre-op systolic blood pressure of less than 70 predict death 100% of the time in our institution. So if you have all four of those factors, you need to have a discussion with the family and the patient about their mortality. I know that's a controversial issue, but it's one that we use. Harborview risk score for ruptured AAA, when you look at this, the area under the curve is 0.76. So it is a discriminator. It is a powerful tool to use. When you look at open repair, if you had all 4 points, zero survival. EVAR, all 4 points, zero survival. Lesson number six, permissive hypotension works. As long as the patient is mentating, you don't need to get their blood pressure up to normal levels. That's all I'm going to say about that. Lesson number seven, mean neck diameter is 26 millimeters and neck length 17 millimeters. So again, looking at all of these images, the average size of these aneurysms when they present ruptured is large at over 8 centimeters. And if you're going to have standard grafts on your shelf, you should have grafts that fit 28 to 32 millimeter diameters. Lesson number eight, pulse pressure variation. This is the best method for resuscitating patients who are mechanically ventilated. They have to be mechanically ventilated in the operating room. The goal is to have a pulse pressure variation of less than 11%. That tells you that the patient is adequately resuscitated. If it's higher than that, they need blood. If it's below 11%, stop resuscitating them. You're going to give them too much fluid. It's so much better than a Swan-Ganz catheter in the old days. Lesson number nine, the incidence of ischemic colitis has essentially evaporated for ruptured aneurysms in the endovascular era. When we looked at over 300 ruptures, you can see that ischemic colitis was found in 6% of patients undergoing EVAR as opposed to 21% undergoing open repair. Lesson number 10, imaging and image transfer technology has revolutionized systems of care. We have a hybrid operating room that is available 24/7 for the management of these types of patients. We do elective cases in this room. As soon as the elective cases are done, the nurses know to set up for management of a ruptured AAA. Lesson number 11, bifurcated endografts are more durable than an AUI FEM-FEM strategy. And I see some people shaking their heads out there. An anatomic reconstruction with a bifurcated graft is much more durable than just treating someone with an AUI FEM-FEM and crossover iliac plug. Lesson number 12, type 2 endoleaks don't matter after EVAR for ruptured AAA. Don't worry about them. They don't matter. Resuscitate the patient, correct their coagulopathy. Lesson number 13, type 1 endoleaks, however, do matter, are rapidly fatal, and must be ruled out with any challenging aortic neck anatomy. If you're pushing the limits and you're trying to treat a short or diseased neck with a lot of calcium and you're worried about a type 1A endoleak, you must rule out that type 1A endoleak before leaving the operating room. The way we used to do this when we didn't have a hybrid operating room was to do oblique imaging at different angles to make sure that we didn't have a type 1 endoleak. Again, in those patients that you're worried about it. Nowadays, we do a completion Dyna CT scan on all of these patients to make sure that they don't have a type 1A endoleak because they are fatal. Lesson number 14, patients who are not EVAR candidates and undergo an attempt at EVAR die. So if you look down here at the mortality rate for those patients who were not considered a candidate for endovascular repair and underwent EVAR, they all die. So don't do it if they're not an EVAR candidate because it doesn't work. Lesson number 15, the more you do, the better your results. And this was corroborated by Dr. Schanzer and colleagues looking at large Medicare data in the United States. High volume hospitals do better. I'm going to show just a couple more slides about ICU nursing considerations. These EVAR patients are just as sick as those undergoing open repair. They do need aggressive resuscitation after the repair, and you have to have a low index of suspicion for abdominal compartment syndrome and ischemic colitis. You see on the video to the right there an example of a patient with an abdominal compartment syndrome. After a simple 20-minute EVAR procedure, he had a belly full of blood, rising PA pressures, so we just went ahead and had a low threshold for opening his abdomen and decompressing that abdominal compartment syndrome. Last slide I'll show you, ladies and gentlemen. Just last month in the Journal of Vascular Surgery, we published the Western Vascular Society guidelines for transfer of patients with ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysms. This was a collaborative project with Matt Mell at Stanford, and there's a very nice commentary written by Elliot Chaikoff entitled Ruptured Aneurysm Systems of Care, a National Imperative to Improve Clinical Outcomes. So with that, I'll conclude and thank you for your attention.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.